That's a good Saturday vibe. I like that one. I forget. I know this song, but who is it?
It's a group called Bad Sons, and the song is called Cardiac Arrest.
I like that. It's a good sound. Good stuff. This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, feel free to do that. My Twitter account is at Brad K. Porter. That's at Brad K. Porter if you want to follow Chris. At Chris underscore Bolig, two L's, one G. We just wrapped up with Adam Teicher from ESPN.com talking Chiefs football and the NFL draft coming to Kansas City in 2023. I want to let you know that Chiefs coverage is brought to you by Barron BMW and Mini. Barron BMW and Mini in Kansas City, and also the Tile and Stone Warehouse. The Tile and Stone Warehouse has a huge selection of high-quality tiles, stone, and marble, and everyday low prices. Tile and Stone Warehouse opens 7 days a week. For more information, go to tileandstonewarehouse.com. So appreciate them for sponsoring our Chiefs coverage. Right now, as we head into hour number two, we're going to flip to the other side of the Truman Sports Complex, talk a little Royals baseball for the first time on our show. Patrick Brennan, you can follow him on Twitter, one of the best Twitter handles that I've ever heard, at Painting the Corner. And, of course, he runs the website Royals Farm Report, founder and managing editor. Patrick, how did you get the Twitter handle Painting the Corner? I figured that would have been off the board like years ago.
Yeah, I think I originally tried to go with my name, but I couldn't find anything good. Just all that stuff was taken.
Right.
So I tried to think, you know, baseball stuff, because that's what I, you know, wanted to be the main topic of my account. So sat there, thought of a couple things, and settled on Painting Corner.
That's a good one. I like it. It's right up there with the guy who goes by the name Pitching Ninja. I just like thoughtful names and Twitter handles that are just a little bit different. We're speaking with Patrick Brennan from Royals Farm Report. We're going to get into the draft here in a minute. But first of all, one of the latest call-ups for the Kansas City Royals, Nicky Lopez, is off to a great start, Patrick. And today, I don't know if you've seen the lineup yet that Ned Yost has put together for game one of the doubleheader against the Yankees, but Nicky Lopez is now up at the top. He is leading off for the Kansas City Royals, a move I know Stephen St. John, Nate Buchady, Jake Gutierrez, Mike Boddicker, and everybody's been talking about this, why he was hitting number two. I like him sliding into number one. As you've watched him and profiled him, is that the better spot for him?
Yeah, I think he can definitely work there. When he was called up, I was a bit surprised. I wasn't against it, but I was a bit surprised that Yost right away put him at number two. I thought he'd, you know, start number eight, number nine at the bottom of the order. But he deserved to start out at number two. One of the better bats in the lineup already, but he didn't deserve to be in the bottom of the order with, you know, Hamilton and Maldonado. And now he's number one. I also don't mind it. He will probably end up, good chance he could end up posting one of the better on-base percentages on the team. He's not going to get you with the power, so middle of the lineup won't really work there. His game is on-base skills. He'll put the ball in play. He won't be at the speed of Hamilton, Merrifield, and Mondesi, but he'll get you some stolen bases. He has enough to beat out infield hits. I like him there, and I like Merrifield number two.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Nicky Lopez, when you look at his minor league numbers, he doesn't hit for a lot of power. As you said, he's an on-base guy. That's not going to jump playing at Kauffman Stadium. But in this day and age of on-base percentage being the premier thing that you look at for hitters in Major League Baseball, I think he perfectly profiles out for a leadoff hitter.
Oh, yeah. And nowadays, even with how the ball is flying, power is becoming more important. But on-base will always be a more transferable and important skill than power. It weighs more than power. It creates more value. So he should the Royals lineup should take a step up with him moving up. Merrifield at number two is also good because I think Lopez has better on-base skills than him overall. Merrifield on-base isn't great, but it will play better at number two.
They'll have Mondesi at three, Gordon four, so everybody kind of slides down the disappointing name that I think we're all disappointed every time we see it. Chris Owings is going to be in there at seven today, and it's just – Patrick, I can't fight it anymore. I mean, I hate the term it is what it is, but the Royals are just going to play him. If you're on the roster, you have to play. I totally get it. And it can be frustrating as heck for us and for Royals fans. But there he is, Chris Owings, back in the lineup today and playing third base.
Well, it's gotten a bit better lately. It's, at least it's not like it's early in the season where he's basically an everyday player. But, yeah, games are less fun when he's starting.
We're talking a little Royals baseball with Patrick Brennan, who has a great website called Royals Farm Report. You can follow him on Twitter, at Painting the Corner. All right, we got the, you know, the NFL draft gets all the attention. It's a huge party. It's on TV 24/7, and there's months of buildup going into it and months of analysis afterwards. Major League Baseball, not so much. But with the Royals and the success they had with, you know, Moustakas and Hosmer and some of the guys from the past, and now Dozier is paying off as a first-round pick, and picking number 2 overall this year, I think, is getting a little more attention. I do want to promote this fact, by the way. If you go to Royals Farm Report, Patrick has a draft guide on there you can get online for $3. So please check that out. But the Royals at 2, what do you think they're looking at? I think everybody's kind of agreed this Adley Rutschman kid is going to be number 1 overall. But at number 2, we've been talking for, not we, everybody's been in the baseball community has been talking about Bobby Witt Jr., but you've got some other names that you've thrown in there that may be better fits for the Royals.
Yeah, I'll start out by saying if the Royals take Bobby Witt Jr. at number 2, that'll be the consensus pick. They won't be wrong from the beginning.
Right.
It'll all be about developing his hit tool. It will be the it will be a fine pick, and I won't be against it. He's a terrifically talented player. But that being said, there are some other options, and I think it's coming close, but I think my number one preference would be Cal first baseman Andrew Vaughn. He's one of the best hitters to come out in college in a long time. He's right up there. In terms of hitting, he's right up there with Rutschman. He has a legit chance for 60-plus power, 60-plus hit. He's not going to provide you much defensive value. He's likely a first baseman. But at the same time, he's also a very safe pick. He might have one of the hard courts in this draft. And at the same time, he has potential to be a middle-of-the-order bat for a contending team. Other options that have been thrown in, there's Georgia High School shortstop C.J. Abrams, who fits the Royals' profile a lot. Very big speed guy. Might move to center field later. Could develop some power down the line. But he's one of the more athletic players in this draft. And earlier, a couple of months ago, he's kind of fallen a little bit. But UNLV shortstop Bryson Stott was mocked to the Royals a couple of times. He's another high-floor guy, but he would be mocked to the Royals earlier, but he's fallen more in that number 7, number 8, number 9 range. So those are the guys who have been talked about for the Royals. But right now, all signs point to Bobby Witt Jr.
All right, we're speaking with Patrick Brennan, who has a website, Royals Farm Report. You can get his draft guide on there for $3. You can follow him on Twitter, at Painting the Corner. We're talking about draft prospects for the Royals since they have an early pick. You know, I was looking at Andrew Vaughn's numbers on your website, and as you said, he's a sophomore at Cal, but he's slashing .402, .531, .819, and an unbelievable eye-popping 1.350 with 23 home runs. I get that those are good numbers. And one of the things my kids asked me about the other day, well, how do you factor in the aluminum bat when you go into the draft? And I said, well, you guys go to the Cape Cod League or Summer Wood Bat League. So when you're looking at numbers like that, that are just off the charts, how much do you, how much do you put into your evaluation the switch that's going to happen between the aluminum bat and the wood bat?
Yeah, it's not always linear. One of the main things I do look at is the Cape Cod League, but sometimes those numbers can be fooling. They're a small sample size. You know, if a guy struggles there, he's not written off forever with the wood bat, but it can raise some concerns. And there were a couple prospects in my draft guide that I detailed with that down in the lower first round. But Vaughn, he's mastered college. So to see him, whenever he goes to Pro Bowl, it wouldn't be surprising at all if he starts mastering a lot of levels, as some of that competition is very comparable to what he's playing in college baseball. I think it becomes more of a concern when you make that jump to AA, AAA. That's where the real jump is. But he has a great hit tool. There isn't much concern that he'll be able to hit pro pitching. He wouldn't be a guy that I would be very concerned with that.
We're speaking with Patrick Brennan talking about potential Royals draft picks coming up. And I'm glad we got Patrick on the show because Look, I'll just be honest with you, Patrick. It's hard for me to study high school and college kids. I mean, I watch games when I can, but high school games are harder to find. So I appreciate the work you put in to look at this. So let me go back to Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, a year ago, he was, I don't want to overstate this a little bit, but he was kind of getting the Bryce Harper treatment. Everybody's talking about him. Everybody's watching him. He's got, you know, 30 scouts at every game. So what, as you've watched him and evaluated him, it's, again, with the high school kids, it's a hard transition because you don't know what they're going to grow into their bodies. But when you see Bobby Witt Jr. and the numbers he's putting up, what appeals to you most about his game?
Probably the athleticism. There's a argument that he is the most, if not one of the most athletic players in this draft and one of the more athletic raw high schoolers to come out in a long time. The power is very raw, but very legit. He's about Fangraphs. I'm looking at Fangraphs. He goes bigger in mile, about 60 speed and a 55 field. So he's a good fielder, good speed. He'll provide value there, and he should be able to stay at shortstop. There are two concerns, though. He does have a – there is concern with the hit tool. It could be average, and if it becomes average, watch out. But it could flail, and the Royals are already struggling with some of their top prospects and their hit tools in Wilmington right now. Melendez, Prado, and Matisse. You really don't want another one of those guys to get up, you know, move up the levels and then start struggling, making contact. But there is hope that it could grow into an average hit tool, and if it does, he could grow into a fantastic player. The other concern is that he will be 19 on draft day. That isn't very typical for high schoolers, and he'll be one of the older high school players selected. It's usually, it can be considered a red flag for him playing, you know, against competition that's younger than him. But that isn't enough to, you know, take away all his tools and knock him down. I would totally be fine with the Royals taking him at number two.
Yes, I have read stories about parents starting their kids a year late in school, in kindergarten, so that they'll be older and they'll just crush everybody. And I'm just telling you, sometimes sometimes that doesn't pan out. There's no guarantees with that. We're speaking with Patrick Brennan, who has the website Royals Farm Report. We're talking about the upcoming draft where the Royals will have a good spot to take just about anybody they want. In your analysis of the college players that might be available and the high school players, the Royals last year made it painfully obvious they were going to draft college pitchers, and they went out and got Kowar and Singer, and they're just dominating again. Bubik's been awesome this year. So do you have a kind of a gut feeling for where the Royals will go in their approach, especially that high in the draft, if they'll stick with that college philosophy and try to get those guys to Kansas City in a hurry, or if the right high school prospect is there, that's where they go?
Well, at number two right now, it's becoming almost set in stone with Witt. I haven't seen a guy in over a month, another guy mocked to Kansas City. After that, it becomes anyone's guess. You could guess if they go with a high school position player first, maybe they could lean towards college at pick number 44 in the second round. I don't know if it's going to be a pitcher or a hitter, but I could see them going college. It's very tough to predict. Last year was tough to predict. It was no one envisioned them doing that. We had months of prep heading into the 2018 draft, and we tried to prepare for almost any possible scenario. And when the first five picks were college players, we weren't ready. We did not see that coming. We did not see guys like Singer and Kowar falling to the Royals. But I don't see a reason to think that again this year. I have no idea what they'll do after Witt.
We're speaking with Pat. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
It's very hard to predict.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at the kids who were drafted last year, especially Kowar and Singer, every time I see somebody tweet out their numbers or either the night they're going to make a start or the next day, I'm just blown away. Do you have a – I keep using the feeling gut feeling, but do you have a gut feeling on how quickly – the Royals will try to move them through the system, or with this year being pretty much gone and next year will probably be a struggle, maybe they just go ahead and take their time a little bit?
They're all a little bit different. I believe Singer, they kept him out last year partially due to a hamstring injury, but I believe he could, the year he was drafted, he could have pitched out of the big league bullpen in September. There was obviously no need to do that, but that just speaks to his readiness. Now, obviously, with the Royals not being so good at the major league level now, they can take it slowly with him. Now he's in high A. He missed all of his pro time last year. He looks pretty advanced for there, and I wouldn't be shocked with the move to Double A soon, and that goes for the other guys. Next in line to move to Double A, I would think, is probably Cole. And then they just moved Bubic to high A, so I expect him to stay a little bit there. Maybe if he starts performing well, he can make another jump to that Double A. Lynch has been good in high A, but he's still been inconsistent with his command, so maybe there's a couple things he could work on there, but also wouldn't be surprised if he's in Double A at the end of the year. Then next year, if it's been training, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of these guys start getting work with the Major League Club, and then maybe start the year in Double A again, move up to Triple A eventually. So I think earliest, we could see one of them towards the end of next season, and I think the one who has a head start in everyone is Singer.
Outstanding. You mentioned earlier the trouble the Royals have been having with the hitting prospects right now, and we talked a lot last season about the two players you mentioned, MJ Melendez and Sulu Matias. What has led to their kind of regression a little bit?
Well, the jump to low A from high A is one of the bigger ones in all the minor leagues. And then also the fact that they were moving from a very hitter-friendly park in Lexington to a very pitcher-friendly park in Wilmington didn't help. That isn't the main cause of the issue. It isn't, again, isn't helping them. The main thing with them is they always have had, Melendez, Matias, and Prado. Well, Prado didn't come out of high school. He was considered a good hit tool. But pro ball, that hasn't transitioned. But last year, they all struck out at non-ideal rates. And that already raised some concerns for how that would transition to high A and the other upper levels. That was all their one caveat. And right now, basically, worst-case scenario happening for all of them. They're all hitting, I haven't checked, but I think they're all hitting around 150, 160. A lot of their power has been vanished due to the hitting and the testing part. Tough league to play in. Basically, it's all a hit tool. Maybe they're just long slumps. Maybe they're struggling against more advanced pitching. But there is some concern at the rates they make contact at.
All right, Patrick, final question for you. With the Royals farm reports, are we going to see Bubba Starling this year? I mean, I think it's time. The money was already invested years ago. He's playing well. He's been, he's been able to stay healthy. I just don't see a reason why Bubba Starling isn't on this roster soon.
Yeah, there's two things going against him right now. The health. He hasn't shown a consistency of health lately. So far he's looked good. Other than, I think he was hit by a pitch in the hand when bunting. And he had some neck stiffness. But he's only missed a couple games. He's basically been healthy. That would be his biggest roadblock to the major leagues. Last year, last year, if he would have stayed healthy, he would have almost surely made his debut because they circled through some outfielders and while he was just sitting on the injured list. The other thing is he is not on the 40-man roster. They reduced him off it, I believe, last offseason. And he's also out of options. Not a good combo. That means now if you want to call him up, you have to bring him on the 40-man roster, DFA someone, bring him up, and once he's up for good. He's not coming up for, a couple days, a week, a month. He's up for good. Once he's up, the only way you can send him down is by releasing him and exposing him to waivers. So it should be interesting how they handle that.
Hey Patrick, I thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, I want to encourage our listeners, check out RoyalsFarmReport.com and also check out Patrick on Twitter, @PaintingTheCorner, and get that baseball draft guide. It's online. It's $3, and Patrick, that would be the perfect thing to have your laptop or your iPad open to the draft guide during the draft, so that we all get the information on who the Royals are taking.
Mm-hmm, definitely, that's when I wrote this. I was like, this would be perfect for sitting and watching the draft, having this in front of you.
All right, hey Patrick, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right. That's Patrick Brennan, Royals Farm Report. First time we've had him on the show. It's good stuff. It's like I said, it's hard to study or get to know that much about the players who the Royals might draft, whether the high school kids, college kids. I mean, some of them are known commodities. Bobby Witt Jr. has been a known commodity for...
What are you talking about, Brad? You're not watching, 6A Texas high school baseball?
No.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
You're not watching college baseball?
I did. I watched... I had a wager on the Iowa-Nebraska Big Ten tournament game yesterday because I have a friend of mine who played baseball at Nebraska. And then, of course, my good friend Dana Hughes, who played for the Chiefs, played minor league baseball. He played baseball at Iowa. And so I was texting Dana during the games, and I texted my friend, and I said, hey, you want to put a little wager on this? So, yeah, I watched some college baseball. Not a ton, but some.
It's not huge around these parts.
No.
Not huge.
No.
But, yeah, we'll see. I'm not. I went to a school that was a huge college baseball-centric college.
Did you overlap with, was it Brandon Finnegan?
I was not. He left my senior year of high school.
Okay.
Because he was the only, he was the only pitcher to pitch in a College World Series in the World Series in the same year. So, no, I was a year late to that one. But still, like, Fort Worth, it's a huge, everyone shows out for the games. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I enjoyed Brandon Finnegan just going scorched earth on the way out the door after he got traded by the Royals, too. That's a classy goal. You never do something like that because they might trade back for you someday, and you certainly don't want to torch the place down. So whatever it is, what it is. So good stuff from Patrick Brennan. Again, RoyalsFarmReport.com. Get his draft guide, and you can just have it there on your iPad or your laptop and get all the good information about the prospects the Royals are looking to draft, which is coming up here, in a week and a half? It's right around the corner here.
It's the first week of June.
Yeah, I know. Remember, it's always the first week of June. I just couldn't remember the date. So we'll take a quick timeout. Chris, do we want to do Bolig Bites in the next segment? You feel up for that?
Yeah, let's do it. I got some good stuff.
All right, Bolig Bites with Chris Bolig, where he's got sound bites from the world of sports. We'll play them, laugh at them, scratch our head at them, and react to them. So that's coming up next. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. Hopefully, you're enjoying the three-day weekend. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The unmistakable theme song for Bolig Bites on Sports Saturday. Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Hope you're enjoying the three-day weekend. If you have to work, I hope you're safe out there. All the folks that have to work this weekend, like Chris has to work this weekend, I have to work this weekend, it's the way it goes.
And we'll be hanging out on Memorial Day as well.
Yeah.
Running the show with the program.
That's
so,
right.
Well, the good gentlemen of the program have the day off for the holiday after, you know, they're always working hard. So taking over for them for a day will be a fun time.
So I'm filling in for Seren on Monday. Do you have to do a double fill-in for both Jed Marshall and Curtis Siebel? You have to play both roles?
I think I'm doing both, but I was talking to Jed about that. I was like, all right, so am I going to be doing like local sports centers and doing empty hours? And we'll figure it out.
Okay.
It'll be a good time. We'll get it all straightened out.
All right, so let's set this up. We normally do this on Sunday, but we don't have a show tomorrow. This is called Bolig Bites, where Chris Bolig, who's run the show, has sound bites from the world of sports. It might be weird, crazy, funny, dumb. I don't know.
We had a lot of, or good insight, maybe.
Good
who
insight.
Knows?
I had a lot of Charles Barkley last week. I like that. So what do you got? What do you got?
We got a lot of different things this
all
week.
Right. Take it away.
We're gonna start out. It's kind of in the realm of sports. So if you guys have been following, James Holzhauer from Jeopardy has
been
a big winner. He's over two million dollars,
yep.
And he's a professional sports gambler by trade, but took a year off to just focus on how to hack Jeopardy, basically. So Alex Trebek was asking about his education or how he knows so much.
Okay.
All right, James Holzhauer is our champion, ladies and gentlemen. Some people have wondered how you know so much. Where did you get your education? Where did you go to school?
Did you go to college? Yes, I went to the University of Illinois, and I would say I majored in online poker.
Were you a good student in the subjects you did attend?
I attended class as little as necessary.
So, guys, if you want to be successful in life, play online poker a lot. Don't really pay attention in school, and you'll make a lot of money on Jeopardy. You'll make $2 million.
You know what?
And more, probably.
I love this story because now I'm watching every time it comes on, or I'm DVRing it because I think it's on like at 3:30 on 41 Action News, NBC. And I was fascinated when, who was the guy who did it before? Ken,
It was like early 2000s. Yeah, Ken something. I don't know.
They just called him Ken. Yes. So it's, and I, Joe Posnanski tweets back and forth with him, which I think is totally weird. But I like the story because I just like to see somebody crushing it. But he goes for the big dollar clues first. And then he hits the daily double, and almost every, you know, most people, I'll wager 500, Alex, or I'll wager 1,000 bucks, Alex. He's like, if he's not going double, he's giving out
it down.
Big numbers.
He's pretty confident usually in what he knows.
He's cocky a little. I think he's kind of a wise ass.
Yeah, but I think he's also probably socially awkward though. Like, if you think about it, he probably played a ton of online poker in college. I'm not even kidding. People that play that I knew, like my older brother's friends who played online poker in college, like. It's pretty crazy, and he's a professional sports gambler. So like, I don't know, but this is his big time. This is his moment. I'm fine with it. And then there's all these people complaining, like former contestants, about how he's ruining the game and the entire. Like, this is about winning money. Like, stop being mad about losing. It's like, are you kidding me?
It's like pitchers who get upset with a hitter who hits a home run and maybe watches it for a second. If you don't want him to hit a home run, stop him. If you want to beat this guy on Jeopardy. Study harder. Go beat him. Figure it out.
Figure out the system.
Somebody will beat him someday.
It's kind of like analytics. Like, he's taking analytics and applying them to Jeopardy and crushing it.
Yesterday, when he went over $2 million, they got the final Jeopardy, and one contestant didn't even make it because he was in negative dollars. So he had, I don't know, like $25,000, and his opponent had like $1,800. So he didn't even have to guess, but he threw down. Bunch more money.
Yeah, so we'll move on from Mr. Holzhauer. If you didn't know, the Magic Johnson fiasco this week, or not fiasco, him defending himself. So there's two parts to this. We'll hear first from Magic Johnson from First Take this week.
Okay.
And then I start hearing, you know, Magic, you're not working hard enough. Magic's not in the office. So people around the Laker office was telling me, Rob was saying things. And
Rob Pelinka.
And I didn't like those things being said behind my back, that I wasn't in the office enough and so on and on. So I started getting calls from my friends outside of basketball saying those things now were said to them outside of basketball.
So there is Magic Johnson's side. He went on kind of like a whole crusade on First Take to kind of, you know, Magic's, who people said, it was the wrong thing to do or whatnot. But as people said on ESPN, if you know anything about Magic, that's what he was going to do.
Yeah. He's not backing down.
He's not going to like have someone drag his name through the mud. Like, he's going to defend himself, which most people I think would do.
He's just going to pick a huge stage to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And then here is what Rob Pelinka has to say about Magic's comments.
I think the most important thing for me is the 2 years of getting to work side by side with Irvin are some of the greatest memories I have in sports and work. He's an unbelievable person to work with. He fills the room with joy and vision. And truly, it's saddening and disheartening to think he believes things are a misperception. I think all of us in life probably have been through things where maybe there's third-party whispers or he said, she said things that aren't true. And then I have talked to him several times since he decided to step away. We've had many joy-filled conversations. In fact, 2 days ago, we were reliving the combine and the fourth pick and talking about the great future that this franchise has. So these things are surprising to hear and disheartening. But I look forward to the opportunity to talk with him and sit down with him and work through them, just like in any relationship, because they're just simply not true. I stand beside him. I stand with him as a colleague, as a partner. I've always supported everything he's done and will continue to. And, you know, I think that's the best way to address that.
So it kind of sounds like Pelinka basically is like, I support Magic Johnson, but this is simply not true.
Right.
I don't really know what this is.
It's a good old-fashioned pissing contest what it is.
I think Pelinka is kind of shady because he says a lot of contradictory things in this statement.
Well, Magic has too over the last few weeks. Here's the thing.
I mean, I don't know either of them, so I don't know who is true, I mean, or who is right or on being honest, but Also, do you? I think that doesn't Rob Pelinka kind of look like Rob Lowe, Loki?
He's kind of different looking. Yeah,
he looks like Rob Lowe.
If Rob Lowe had actually looked his age, the way he's supposed to, because Rob Lowe has looked the same for 25 years. Here's the thing about Magic: when they hired Magic Johnson, they weren't bringing him in to negotiate contracts. They were not bringing him in to do the accounting on the salary cap. They were bringing in Magic Johnson to be Magic Johnson. So he can go to LeBron or whoever and bring him in. Now, he hasn't racked up as many guys as he maybe should have. That was his job, was being Magic Johnson. That's it. And if they don't like it, well, they had a falling out. So
it's too bad.
It's done.
It's too bad.
If you're Kawhi Leonard and you're watching that,
it's just another example of a former player not being able to do front office stuff that well.
Right. If you're Kawhi Leonard and you're looking at your options for next year and LeBron comes calling from the Lakers, I'd say, you know, I think I might prefer the Clippers.
That's what a lot of people are saying right now, at least in NBA circles, that it's Clippers over. But I think I just saw it yesterday or the day before, but LeBron has been in contact with Kawhi or something.
I'm sure he has.
I mean, I'm sure he's going to do everything in his power to get him or whoever it may be, another big free agent to come and help out. Because it's a messy situation right now with the Lakers organization.
It ain't good.
Moving to the NFL. Donovan McNabb was in the news talking about how he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. This is what he had to say about his Hall of Fame case.
Absolutely. And I'm not hesitating on that. I am a Hall of Famer. My numbers speak for itself. Eli does have 2 Super Bowl rings. I will give him that. And, I mean, that obviously carries weight for a lot of people and a lot of voters that look in it. But you also look at the kind of game changing. Has he changed the game for the New York Giants? I think if Eli probably would have been gone from New York 3 years ago and went somewhere else and maybe changed that franchise up, it would help his cause. But the fact that a lot of Giants fans are still sitting on those rings and saying how great Eli is helping his cause. Well, I mean, you look at it in a sense for a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, for Jim Kelly making it to the Super Bowl 4 times and not winning it, but he made it to the Super Bowl 4 times. To Troy Aikman, my numbers are better than Troy Aikman, but he has Super Bowl rings and he's played with Hall of Famers as well. That's the question that I've always asked. Is,
play with T.O.?
I did play
he's
with T.O.
He's a Hall of Famer?
But I didn't play with T.O. for a amounts of years.
Right.
And so when you look at my numbers, but then they always want to add other stuff into it. And, you know, so how was he an all pro? Was he this? How many Super Bowl opportunities? People don't realize how hard it is to get to the NFC Championship and to get there 5 times.
Yeah.
And then make it to a Super Bowl. It's tough. And so finally we have two Hall of Famers with Brian Dawkins and T.O. And so maybe that helps the cause going forward.
So, Donovan McNabb, when they were the whole premise of this was saying, does Eli Manning deserve to be a Hall of Famer? And then Donovan McNabb's like, well, I deserve to be in over Eli, essentially, or at least if he gets in, then I should get in. So,
my tendency here is to defer to Seren Petro, the Syracuse grad, and get his opinion. But I was looking at his numbers while you were playing that soundbite, and they're better than Aikman's. I think getting to 5 NFC Championship games is huge. That's really
and
hard.
The Super Bowl,
it's
that's hard.
Rare and it's hard. It's rare and it's hard. I mean, if the Chiefs had gone to 5 straight AFC Championship games and got to 1 Super Bowl, probably have a couple of Hall of Famers on there. The Eagles are getting them now. Yeah. I think Donovan probably should be there. Publicly lobbying for it is kind of the thing now. Terrell did it for years, and I think Terrell was held out way too long, just my opinion. But, I think Donovan's got a great case.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree so, too. I mean, everyone points to the Troy Aikman thing because his numbers are not very good. Like, I think a career 61 passer rating or whatnot. But the 3 Super Bowls and playing with Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, and other greats.
See, McNabb has 234 career touchdowns. Aikman had 165. That's a big difference.
That's a huge difference.
That's a huge difference.
So we go back. Dennis Rodman in the news. I guess he slapped someone at a club, maybe on his birthday. So here's what he had to say about that one.
I'm not even talking about that. That's kind of like...
Right.
Whatever happened, happened. But until this, it didn't happen. So
it didn't happen.
No, it didn't. I just want to fight past that.
Right, but you didn't slap him. You didn't touch him.
I don't hit anybody in the world. Never in my life. So I'm not worried about that.
You have a message for him if he's watching this?
No.
Not. Okay.
Now my lawyers are taking care of that.
Are you worried about it at all? Or?
No, nothing happened. So that's all I want to say. Nothing happened.
So, according to Dennis Rodman, nothing happened. He did not slap someone assaulting with his hand at a club. I don't know if I can believe this from Dennis.
He's never been known to be a violent person. He's definitely weird, and he goes to North Korea to meet with
diplomat
with brutal dictators, but
yeah, he's never had anything, at least that I can recall, of violence.
No. Wedding dresses on the cover of magazine, whatever. I don't know. Who knows?
It's interesting. It's interesting to look at. So we're going to move a little bit here. Did you watch the Deontay Wilder highlight, at least, or fight when he
knocked the one punch?
One of the most crushing blows I've ever seen in a boxing match.
Oh, snapped his head.
So Tyson Fury, another heavyweight boxer who's very in the, you know, very ambitious and always, you know, trying to be in the news here. He has something to say about a possible, because he's already fought Deontay Wilder before, and here's what he had to say about the fight and a possible rematch with Deontay Wilder.
Great knockout.
Yeah.
Highlight reel. Fantastic. Well done.
Do you think that
heavyweight boxing is not just about knocking someone out? Because when you can't land their punches, as we saw when Deontay Wilder fought the Gypsy King, you lose.
You did something last year that many people, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the analogies, the memes of you as the Undertaker, man. You went down twice, you got up. No one has done that. I mean, what does that say about you?
It says I'm the Gypsy King, and I'm the Gypsy King for a reason.
Okay. Are you excited when the time comes to get back in the ring with Wilder, man, honestly?
Listen, Wilder is a bum. He's got a puncher's chance, that's it. Like I said, Wilder is a massive dosser, yeah, and he works for me.
Do you have any doubt
that's
that...
It. That's all Wilder is. He's a big bum dosser, bum city, hashtag anytime, anyplace, anywhere. And when we fight again, I promised him he'd be looking at the stars.
What is it like actually being hit by that man?
Ain't so bad.
Okay.
I got up, didn't I? And that's it. If he's got anything to say, come see me.
Okay.
We'll have a bare-knuckle fight for free in Times Square this evening.
Lastly, let me ask, when the rematch happens, where do you want the rematch to take place?
Well, I'm not really too bothered where the rematch takes place. As long as I get fair play, I don't care.
Tyson Fury had some choice words after Deontay Wilder hospitalized someone.
Right. I love Tyson Fury. I could listen to that guy talk and he has karaoke too.
He's definitely a showman for sure.
So what was he called? I couldn't understand what he was calling him. A bum?
A bum city, like bum city or a bum. And
okay,
then he kept calling himself the Gypsy King.
Yeah.
So,
I'm all for that. Tyson Fury's great. He's great for the sport.
Yeah,
I'm not a boxing expert. I enjoy the sport on occasion. Stephen St. John can answer all your questions if you have those on the Border Patrol. But after Wilder knocked out the opponent, some of the analysis is that's the only way he can win some of these big fights is just getting one good shot, that he's not that great of an actual boxer. But again, I'll defer to Stephen St. John on that.
All right, moving back to the NFL, Andrew Luck met up with Tom Hanks this week. There was a video of them together, and I think it is probably some of the funniest audio I've heard in a while, especially just because Andrew Luck is such a funny dude.
You like living here?
It's awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic. I love watching you play.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I really, really enjoy it.
So I appreciate it.
How often have you suffered because of your last name?
Let's get you.
I'm right. Guessing from the moment you started, what, Pop Warner football?
It goes both ways.
Yeah.
It does. Here's a pen. Here's a pen.
Oh, here's one.
But it's good.
All right.
Basically, in sports, you get made fun of for everything.
Well,
it doesn't matter what. You build skin
that.
Like an armadillo, as an old coach used to
will
say.
Will you study like the social media after the game?
No. I stay off of social media.
That is.
I'm just a little too old for social media, I feel.
The secret of getting into this world is to ignore anything they say about you.
It's gospel. Right. Now we'll do a handshake. Are you into the hand? No.
What is that?
A handshake picture like coach's camp?
Yeah. The caption will be, Andrew and Tom simulate shaking hands with me for the first time.
That's pretty funny.
Andrew Luck's laugh is just, oh my lord,
it's
that
weird.
Is so funny.
That was funny stuff.
It was, Andrew Luck, I'm too old for social media. I'm Andrew Luck. I am too old. Like, what?
I'm not
you
drunk.
Graduated college in like...
What did he say about lizard skin?
2012 you got drafted.
Yeah.
He's skinned like an armadillo or something.
Or skinned like an armadillo?
Like, what does that even mean? That was just...
That's a weird... I don't know if it's weird that they'd meet. I don't know why Tom Hanks is watching a bunch of Colts games, because he's from Northern California, I think just outside of Oakland.
Big, big Colts fan.
It must be.
A big Stanford guy, probably.
Maybe he was also being the nice guy, like, hey, I love watching you play.
Maybe he's a big Stanford guy. Who knows?
Good stuff. That's funny.
Who knows? And then we got Jay Williams. I'm sure you saw the Bucks. Raptors here is really heating up right now.
Yeah.
It's shifting to Raptors are definitely the favorite now. Do you see, Mike Budenholzer, the coach for the Bucks, talk about Drake and everything, kind of going at him because he was kind of massaging Nick Nurse.
Yeah,
on
that was weird.
So here's what Jay Williams had to say about that whole situation.
Look at this a little differently, maybe.
Mike Budenholzer should be worrying about his team. He shouldn't be worried about flexing on Drake.
It's one dude. As an NBA player, if I'm allowing one dude, so Reggie Miller allowed Spike Lee to mess with him, right?
Right.
Like, those are monumental parts of the game. If you can't take one dude talking trash to you, I don't know what to tell you.
Everybody's always said that Drake's been the sensitive one, and now I see all these other sensitive people about he's too far involved. Like, Drake, do whatever you want. Like, if you want to give your head coach a little back massage, if you want to talk trash to people, please. From an entertainment value, I love it. That's what the game needs. I mean, and I'm going to be real with you, too. These NBA playoffs, especially that one, hasn't been the most exciting.
Right.
Right? So we got Drake to talk about. Good. Elevate.
The only thing that I can see the league think about changing is the fact that he's right there next to the bench.
Yeah.
He's in the in-between area between the two teams. If you're on the opposite side of the court, I got court side seats to the Nets. Like, I would be doing that, talking trash to people.
Sure.
Nobody would care. But since you're right there, that might be the only thing. But as far as scaling him back, Drake should just be Drake.
So Jay Williams loves it.
Yeah.
He's all about it. Are you
Everybody's
about it?
Everybody's talking about it.
I mean, it is the buzz. It is the buzz right now.
Maybe Toronto should do like the University of Texas did with Matthew McConaughey and make him part of the staff.
I think he's heavily involved with the Toronto Raptors organization. So he does a lot of things with them, and I think they're kind of partners in some things.
Right.
Because he's a Canada guy. He's a Toronto guy. So
make him the Minister of Culture, just like Matthew McConaughey. And I think it's hilarious that Matthew McConaughey is right in the middle of the Texas basketball huddle. I find it
McConaughey
weird, but
it's
fun.
Very cool. So.
It's fun, yeah.
And he's their biggest alumni, probably, or most notable alumni still. And he does a lot of stuff with them. I think he teaches a film class there for them.
Right.
Which I'm sure everyone is clicking the button to try to get into. All right, this looks fun. A class taught by Matthew McConaughey? All right, I'll try to get into that. So,
how much time we got left?
I don't think we'll be able to get to the last one. We're running back on time. But, does it for this edition of Bowling Bites. Had some fun. I thought there was some good stuff. Andrew Luck's laugh was
fantastic.
Was hilarious. So I'm excited to see more from Andrew Luck. Hopefully we get some more Andrew Luck bites here as football season comes along, because he is absolutely hilarious.
Quick Matthew McConaughey story. I saw an interview with him years ago. He's talking about growing up in Texas and his dad, and they were going down a gravel road in Texas, and he was wearing flip-flops. I don't know if he's going to school or football practice or something. And he had these flip-flops on. His dad says, "Why are you wearing flip-flops? We don't, this is a gravel road. We're out in the country. You need to have regular shoes on." And Matthew McConaughey said, "Well, Jesus wore sandals." And his dad stopped the car and said, "Get out of the car." And he said, "Why?" And he goes, "Jesus also walked everywhere. Get out." On that note, we will get out for a quick timeout. You are listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. Just wrapped up Bohlig Bites. We'll come up and wrap up this hour. Then we'll get ready for hour number three. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Love that song. Another old school choice. I like that.
Clash is great.
I love the Clash. Absolutely. They have a lot of Clash music on the Gross Point Blank soundtrack, which is a fantastic movie. Yeah, I could listen to the Clash all day. You're on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest on this long holiday weekend. They've got some sunshine right now. Hopefully that holds up, but I think we're supposed to get some more rain either this afternoon or tonight.
Get out to mow your lawns.
Oh, boy.
Right now. Yeah. It's a good time.
Absolutely.
Did you mow your lawn?
No, I have to get a new mower. Mine is broken.
Dang.
I've been looking to get one of those electric ones. Fewer moving parts.
No gas.
No gasoline. Just better. And they're getting better than they used to be. When they first started making them, they were horrible.
Yeah, the technology has improved a little bit.
Right. Absolutely. All right. We're just about out of time for this hour. Coming up next, Nick Garcia, former Sporting KC and Wizards defender, will join us. We'll talk Sporting KC. And then we'll close out the show as we head up to 11, as we head up till noon, pardon me. And then we'll have baseball tonight at noon. We'll give you an hour of Royals coverage.
Baseball tonight. We're going to have some fun on baseball tonight.
I've kind of forgotten. I had my notes last night, but I kind of forgotten that we are actually doing 4 hours today. So it'll be a longer
haul. Hey, we're prepping for Monday.
Hey, we're good.
We're prepping
good
for Monday.
We'll be good to go. We'll be good to go. All right, quick timeout. Again, you're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.